So can we all get along? The question I keep asking my two young toddlers who keep fighting each other, never get the right answer. But today we are talking about mixed workloads in protection storage. Our paper is on redesigning the protection storage for modern workloads. I worked on this paper with my colleagues and ex-colleagues at Dell EMC, Fred, Mahesh, Rahul, Phil, and Ramya. So when we are mainly talking about protection storage, we are mainly talking about our data domain file system. It is the core of our data domain backup appliance. It is a purpose-built backup appliance. It was a purpose-built backup appliance. The main purpose was to do backups and full restores. And there have been papers in the past about how we optimize a file system to avoid the disk bottleneck. Unlike most primary storage systems, which are moving towards using an all-flash storage, protection storage is still needs to be cheap, so we can't go an all-flash on our systems. So in the past, we've talked about avoiding disk bottlenecks, but thanks to a great introduction on fragmentation in the previous paper, dedupe worsens the fragmentation problem, and over time, we've realized we need to address that too. So let me give you a brief overview of what a dedupe file system is and what we do. And we can delve deep into how we are solving a mixed workload problem. So our dedupe storage pipeline is pretty simple. When we get data through one of the storage protocols, we partition it into variable sized chunks. And we form a unique fingerprint for each chunk, add it to our fingerprint index. We filter out any duplicates and write only unique content to disk. We also compress that data before writing, so that adds to the additional savings that customers get on their storage. So in total, we claim up to 40 times reduction in storage space using deduplication and compression. So the way we have avoided the disk bottleneck earlier was we data domain file system relies on stream informed segment layout. When data is written together onto the same file, we tag it together and write to the disk. We collocate it on the disk together. So when it is read back, we don't have to do so many IOs. And we also, for the index lookups and the lot of metadata lookups that are required for a dedupe file system, we use some locality preserved caching. That way, we don't do many IOs to do the inline deduplication. All this goes haywire when you add the new workloads to mix. Let me give you a brief overview of what the shift has been. Traditionally, the backup workloads have always been a weekly full. That is, a primary storage would send all of its data to the backup appliance as a full, and daily they would send us the incremental. But backup applications have evolved. They have become intelligent, and they would right now figure out what changed between each day and send us only the changes since the previous day. So they would send the backup application just the changes, yet would like us to represent the full backup, a virtual full backup, so that they can restore it as needed. The restore workload also changed from restoring the full data back to the primary storage to being able to access that data instantly on protection storage itself. So primary storage applications can directly mount an image on protection storage appliance for a short period of time, during which we need to support applications pretty similar to, you know, most primary storage devices support. So this translated from what we used to support, which was pure sequential workload, to a mixed workload, which is non-sequential and sequential. And at the same time, our system, which was mostly throughput-oriented, needs to be latency-sensitive too. Other than the process of backup and restore, the format in which data is stored on our systems has also changed. So the backup applications used to use their own format for doing the backups, where they would tar a bunch of small files and store a very large file on our system. Now they would try to store it in its native format. So that results in what used to be a few of very large files on our system. Now we have millions of small files. So we need to address this new change in data format as well. So the challenge was to enhance a file system to support a mix of these workloads. There have been some papers in the recent past about what the shift in workloads is, more detailed explanation of that, and also how we changed a garbage collection algorithm to suit these workloads. In this paper, we mainly deal with how we handle the non-sequential I/O performance. So just going through the same, given this brief overview of the shift in workloads, I want to show why it impacts the file system performance. Assuming we keep the same stack as before, any I/O that happens on a file first needs to look up its inode. If it is a very large file, the directory lookup cost, the I/O cost, is amortized. Whereas for very small files and millions of files, we need to improve our lookup performance. Once you get to the inode in a dedupe file system, before you get to the data chunk, you need to load multiple layers of metadata chunks that point to the data chunks. So in our file system, we at least need to load the lowest level of file metadata from disk. And for sequential workload, it can be prefetched efficiently into memory. For non-sequential workload, that cannot be done. So this is additional I/O. We talked about fragmentation earlier. So for sequential workloads, there's good enough locality. So we don't do many on-disk index lookups. But at the same time, for pure non-sequential workloads, every I/O requires an on-disk index lookup. And on a petabyte scale, our index is usually bi-level. And usually, any index lookups results in two disk I/Os. So even to fetch the data sequential in our system, we usually merge multiple I/Os to a single I/O, and it eventually results in very few I/Os to disk, whereas for random I/O, that translates to many more I/Os. So looking at a 1 megabyte sequential I/O, going through our stack, it essentially requires 8 I/Os to be used to serve 1 megabyte. When we look at 8 kilobyte random I/O, that also requires 8 I/Os. So to serve around 1 megabyte of data using random I/O, we nearly require close to 1,000 I/Os if we didn't change our stack. Which is why, I mean, we weren't able to support more than a single VM instantly being accessed from our system in the past. But so looking at our system, the first thing we realized is metadata lookup cost is very expensive. With a two-level index and requiring two disk I/Os per every chunk read, both metadata chunk and data chunk, even for sequential I/Os, as we move to denser drives, as 2 terabytes and 3 terabytes are getting extinct, we had to move our fingerprint index to SSD. If you look at our total physical space, our systems are in the support up to a petabyte of physical storage. So index could be up to 1.5% of that, and moving all of that to SSD would add a lot of cost to protection storage systems. So we optimized this by, instead of caching the long fingerprint, which is 4 words, we cache only 1 word. This increases, I mean, obviously because we are not using a unique key, now there will be collisions, but the collision rate is pretty less, and the cache is mainly for performance. So we resolve collisions by looking up the full fingerprint index if it happens. So not just for non-sequential workload, when we moved from 2 to 4 terabyte drives, the fingerprint index cache helped improve our sequential restore performance by almost 32% on disk-bound systems. So we did add SSD cache even for traditional workloads, like I said, and we reduced the total I/Os required in this case from 8 to 6. Let's move on to non-sequential workloads. That's the core of the paper. Once we get to non-sequential workloads, as we see that every external I/O does require a file metadata load, which was also expensive. The file metadata is essentially the lowest level of metadata in our system, covers 4 megabyte worth of logical data. So logically, it accounts to 0.05% of our logical space. So this seems less, but when you look at the physical space, especially when we are getting daily full backups, this accounts to nearly 10 to 20% of the physical storage. So we can't obviously move everything to SSDs. So the optimization we have done is to move to cache file metadata on read misses when we detect that the I/O is non-sequential in manner. We only load file metadata into SSD cache for certain files that are being accessed randomly. And to optimize the way we design this cache is file metadata is variable sized. So we are not going to write variable sized chunks onto SSDs. We do packet into 1 megabyte eviction units and write to SSDs. Right now, the eviction policies are pretty simple, yet I think the workloads that we use currently are sufficient. It is sufficient for the workloads we use currently. And just the file metadata cache alone reduces the total non-sequential I/O requirement from 8 hard drive I/Os to 4. So that was enough to improve our total IOPS and also reduce the overall latency. We were able to get it under 20 milliseconds with just file metadata on SSD. But the requirement keeps increasing as we support more use cases on production storage. We want to support dev test and other things. Then we needed to increase our IOPS. So we moved the data also into SSD. And yes, we can't move petabytes of data into SSD. So even here, we did the same optimization where we would load only data that is being accessed in a non-sequential manner into SSDs. As you would expect, data would occupy more space in the SSD cache, so we dedicate close to 40% of our SSD cache for data that is being accessed non-sequentially. And using this, we support up to 30 plus of VMs being accessed simultaneously on a protection storage and primary storage applications running on top of them. And with data cache, as you might expect, once the cache is warmed enough, we don't send any more IOs to the hard drives. So the total IOPS requirement from the underlying storage reduces greatly. So with addition of SSD caches for non-sequential I/O, we are not sending any more IOs to disk. Essentially, this can be a workload that is now can be run in parallel with other backup and restore workloads. So in addition to adding SSD caches, the first thing we had to do was do optimizations in our software. To do that, we had to first find out what the access patterns are that we are seeing in our file system. We implemented an access pattern detection algorithm, which would try and detect different patterns that we see. The main patterns that we typically see are sequential, that is the core backup and restore workloads. And we also see something called non-sequential I/O, but monotonically increasing offsets. This is typical of incremental forever workloads where, you know, updates are sent in an increasing offset manner. And the other pattern we see is a non-sequential I/O pattern. And we also detect this in a more intelligent way. We don't try to add a pattern per file. We try to detect these patterns within multiple regions within a file. That way, if two or three applications are accessing the file simultaneously, we are able to detect and identify multiple patterns simultaneously. So once we detect the access pattern as one of these, we do multiple optimizations on top of that. For example, we disable simple prefetching of data into memory for non-sequential I/O. And we also disable some of the sizzle optimizations that we talked about earlier, that is entirely based on locality. This is for non-sequential I/O. We also parallelize a lot of I/Os in our system for non-sequential I/O. In the previous case, for sequential I/O, we know that I/Os are dependent on each other, so our system used to process everything serially. As soon as we detect that I/O is non-sequential, we issue all file metadata loads in parallel, as well as the fingerprint index lookups in parallel, and this reduces the overall latency for non-sequential I/O. And for non-sequential incremental small writes, what we realized is the dedupe doesn't matter. Even if we try and do the best dedupe, it doesn't get as much dedupe. So we disable dedupe for small non-sequential writes. And we have also optimized the way we chunk. It's not always variable-sized content-based chunking. We also optimize our chunking based on application workloads. It can be fixed block size for VM image backups, for example. And another optimization is to avoid the file metadata churn for non-sequential I/O. More details about these optimizations are in the paper. So other once we support once we enhance support for non-sequential I/O workload in our system, we had to have a balance between how much resources we dedicate for each of them. So we added more QoS features for mixed workloads. We would dedicate a certain amount of shares for non-sequential I/O versus sequential I/O. Currently, the shares is static, but it can be enhanced to be more dynamic in future. We've also modified the CPU scheduling algorithm from a simple round robin to choosing the least loaded CPU instead, because in mixed workloads, we expect each I/O to behave differently. In our system, reads are considered more important, so we give higher priority for reads. And we also added, now that we add more concurrency and parallelism within our file system, we added more edge throttling to not overwhelm our system if we do see too many IOs. So this is based on a feedback from subsystem health, and eventually we add a throttling mechanism based on the access pattern. So through experiments, we have demonstrated that increasing the shares for non-sequential I/O workloads also increases performance linearly, and vice versa for sequential workloads. So our QoS mechanism works, essentially. And in this mixed workload performance evaluation, we capped our non-sequential performance at 10K IOs, and its shares at 10%, and we see that it doesn't impact backup or restore performance by more than 10%. And moving on to just pure non-sequential I/O performance evaluation, sorry, I don't have more details about the benchmark here, but we do use a FIO benchmark. We are doing 8 kilobyte random I/O workload here. And the distribution is uniform. We do have experiments with Pareto as well. So, with our system, without any enhancements, it was not good enough to even run multiple VM experiments. So the first experiment I show here is with some software optimization and without the SSD cache. And we see that we reach up to 5,000 IOPS with 32 parallel files being accessed. The file is here a representation of a VM decay. It's in general around 100 gigabytes of size. So we are pretty much bound by the disk IOPS available on the system. As you see, every external I/O requires 8 I/O. So if the system has 20,000 IOPS, we are limited by 1/8 of that. And once we added SSD caching, but only metadata in it, that is the file metadata and fingerprint index, we see that we reach up to 30,000 IOPS. And once we added data, we are pretty close to 57,000 IOPS on our higher end systems. And to demonstrate the need for software optimizations that we made, we have an experiment which shows with just data and metadata in SSD, but no software optimizations, we only get up to 20,000 IOPS. So this demonstrates that a part of our conclusion, we do need to optimize our software stack along with just adding the hardware. Adding SSDs alone won't give us the best performance. So we had to tune in a deduplication file system. We had to avoid as many IOs as possible first and then add an SSD on top of that to achieve the peak IOPS that we needed. So in conclusion, with adding metadata on SSD, we showed an improvement of 5.7x IOPS relative to a system without SSDs. Adding data cache improved it by further 1.7x, and adding software optimizations improved it by another 2.7x. So if you look at a system 3 or 4 years back and compared to now, we have improved our performance in leaps and bounds. So this has enabled us to support, in a way, most primary storage applications in a degraded fashion on protection storage. And the icing on the cake is that even after so many modifications to our file system stack, our bread and butter, which is to support sequential backups and restores, the performance has not degraded. And in future, we aim to, like right now, we are very limited by the amount of SSDs we add onto our system, which is capped at 1% for the total physical space. In future, we plan to add more SSDs depending on the use case. And as we improve our IOPS, we would see more bottlenecks in terms of CPU, as well as available IOPS from SSD hardware itself. So thank you.
Questions? Can you comment, like, what are the cache hit rates for your fingerprint index or fingerprint data cache and the data cache?
What's the
cache hit ratio you see from your workloads for these different three types of caches?
Cache hit ratio. So for metadata cache, we get nearly 100% of cache hit because metadata, like I said, it's 0.05% of logical space, and we allocate close to 10% of our SSD for metadata. But for data, it depends on the distribution. Right now, the experiments we did, we get close to 95% cache hits for up to 24 VMs, and we get around 75% cache hits with 32 VMs. So all the VMs are running a benchmark that we developed, which simulate applications like Exchange and other workloads.
Hi, Sudarshan, Wisconsin. Can you comment on the memory budget that you have for these workloads? Like, what is the maximum that you can?
So by adding SSDs, we are adding again another deduplicated storage in SSDs as a cache. So the index for SSDs is actually currently entirely in memory. Right now, the requirement is around 5 gigabytes per terabyte of SSD that we add on the system.